Thanks for listening to Radio Heteroglossia. I'm Anna Fonseca, and our guest today is Mr. Adebayo Anthony Ogunbure. He's a PhD candidate and an academic advisor in the Department of Philosophy at the University of Ibadan in Nigeria, Africa. Today, we will be discussing the article written by Mr. Ogunbure entitled African Indigenous Knowledge, Scientific or Unscientific, published in 2013 in the academic journal Inkeniso, Journal of Humanities and Social Sciences of the University of Zululand in South Africa, which examines the causes and assumptions that create tension and antagonism between Western and African indigenous knowledge. Mr. Ogunbure, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Anna. It's my pleasure to be on your show.
Great. In your article, you argue that, quote-unquote, knowledge is a cultural phenomenon, and insofar as Africans have a cultural understanding, they are also capable of scientific thinking. Here, you are conveying a lot of interesting ideas. One of them is the role of culture in understanding systems of knowledge, and culture is one of those terms that have different meanings for different peoples. I would like to know, what is your understanding of culture, and in what sense is that you see this dynamic interaction between culture or cultures and the production of knowledge?
It is upon my understanding of culture as the totality of the body of knowledge produced within a society that I argued that indigenous knowledge is also scientific because it is produced within a culture, just as the knowledge in Western science is also produced within a culture.
Another point that caught my attention in the above-mentioned quote was indeed your reference to scientific knowledge, and you're referring to it now as well in the context of explaining your definition of culture and the cultural basis of knowledge that you argue in your article. You seem to have a concern about dismissing indigenous African knowledge as non-scientific, and thus you argue that indigenous African knowledge is scientific in your article. So my questions in this regard are, what is your definition of indigenous knowledge, and to what extent are you referring to it as scientific as well in order to challenge that dichotomy that exists between Western and indigenous forms of knowledge?
Good. Thank you so much for that question. Now, what's my view of indigenous knowledge? I would define indigenous knowledge as the systematic body of knowledge acquired by local people through the accumulation of experiences and intimate understanding of environment within a given culture. Now, in my paper, I'm arguing that we can call indigenous knowledge scientific. Why? All forms of knowledge are produced within a culture. That's what I refer to as the cultural basis of knowledge. So insofar as they are produced within a culture, we cannot talk of a standard that, okay, one standard, there's a standard of science, which is in the Western world. So all forms of knowledge within native people does not have elements of science. No, that argument is faulty. It is a false dichotomy. It's a false dichotomy based on the misunderstanding of the concept of science and culture. What is science? Mm-hmm. Science, in a loose sense, is the ability of a people to explore and exploit the resources of nature in order to make life more meaningful, in order to make human life meaningful. So if we can explore the resources of nature, the environment, to make life easy within native communities, within cultural frameworks, then why can't we grant the status of science to African indigenous knowledge or other forms of indigenous knowledge? And I have argued in my paper, that is why we can refer to it as scientific, because there's no standard definition of science. So that's my argument. And that's why I said it is a false dichotomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an important clarification, because the way I see it is in your definition of science that this argument was based on, which is a broader definition of science, right? That it's not just something mm-hmm. that Western cultures have. Other cultures also have their ambitions of science. And therefore, mm-hmm. we can call indigenous forms of knowledge science as well.
Yeah.
You also talk about the oral aspect of most African indigenous knowledge. Why orality is so important in most African cultures? Is there an advantage to communicate their knowledge orally?
Thank you so much for that interesting question. Well, first thing I need to say is that when you look at oral tradition, you're looking at African languages within African culture. African languages are exceptionally wealthy in folktales, proverbs, and witty sayings, which oftentimes communicate certain ideals, values, and precepts that guide people within African community, how they go about their life. So when we look at oral traditions, we are talking about ideology that is transferred by oral method. When you talk of orality, you are talking of a people's epistemology. Epistemology is simply the source of knowledge, the limits of human knowledge, and how human knowledge is characterized within different cultures. So the advantage within Africa on the issue of expressing their thoughts orally is that, first one, it prevents distortions of the autochthonous, the indigenous views on life, nature, and society at large. Apart from that, preservation of indigenous knowledge in oral means, oral tradition, also have the impact of preserving history. Africans have what they call eulogy or praise singing. If you cite somebody's eulogy, we can talk about his historic antecedents, what his family lineage is like, what are the values they appreciate. So in oral tradition lies nuggets of knowledge, nuggets of belief systems that are very deep. Africans believe that there are some deep aspects of their ontology that are best preserved and best transmitted orally. And they also believe that such forms of knowledge, if they're trying to translate it to writing, a lot of things will be lost. So when Africans try to preserve their thoughts orally, they are trying to ensure that the views that they have is what it really is in Jinle. You know, in Yoruba, in Jile. That is, we go back to the roots.
It is interesting what you explain about the African perspective on orality, because for most Western cultures, it is writing that avoids distortion. Well, there are still distortions, but the prominent belief in most Western cultures is that writing is the best way to preserve their knowledge of their history, etc. So how, for most Africans, how does orality avoid distortion specifically?
Africans preserve their indigenous knowledge from distortions by expressing our ideology, by expressing our belief system in African languages, because that is the way that we can know the traditional conceptions of society and nature.
Mm-hmm. But then it can also be argued that African indigenous knowledge can be communicated in writing, still using African indigenous languages. So what is it about orality that fits so well within African indigenous languages?
The African culture, especially Yoruba culture, is very colorful. I know, growing up as a young boy, I grew up knowing my grandparents expressing most of our family beliefs orally. And they will sing it, they will chant it, they will say it in folk tales. The essential thing that I want to point out about orality, it depicts the aesthetic flavor of African cultural beliefs. Now, let me go further by citing an example of the Jala, which I cited in one of my papers as a form of oral practice within the Yoruba culture that shows so much indigenous knowledge preserved in it, and is also rendered, the rendition. You see, the beauty of the rendition cannot be overemphasized, because it's a different thing if you just read it, you write it down. It's not animated.
Yeah, it's hard to look at the tone, at the emotion behind it that also contributes to its meaning.
That's what I'm driving at.
It's really interesting because it's a more comprehensive view of language, that is not just the word, the written word, but it's also the body language, the tone of your voice. Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to give an example of an Ijala chant, just to make you understand the emotion. When I express myself orally now with this chant, you understand what I'm trying to say. So let me just give you this chant on nature. This chant was chanted in Ibadan during the historic flooding of 1980, and it goes thus. After the chant, I would give a translation.
Okay, thank you.
It goes thus. Ojo odun yi yo payeru ni. Ojo odun yi yi o payeru ni. Ogboko ogbeyawo. Ogboko ogbeyawo. O tun gbomo lo. This chant is translated as follows. Will this year's rain destroy the world? Will this year's rain destroy the world? is worth the husband and the wife. Is swept the husband and the wife, and also swept the child away. So this chant was to attest to the destructive havoc which rain can cause among humans, and also to warn the people within the Yoruba community in Ibadan that the danger in flood. They also gave an additional chant to this, which is quite long. I just decided to take the short form to tell the people on how to go about preventing the flood from reoccurring. So what this helps to do is to show you that in a way, there are ways messages can be communicated within indigenous people in aesthetic ways, so that there will be emotion, there will be sympathy, there will be empathy, and it will be easy for people to listen to the voice of true chant. And we should put up practices that will prevent such occurrence from coming to pass again.
Thank you so much, Mr. Okumbure, for taking the time to join us today and share with us your knowledge and point of view on these issues.
Thank you so much, Anna. It is my pleasure to be on your show once again. And thank you so much for giving me this platform to express some of my views and ideas. Thank you.
The conversation continues. If you have a comment that you would like to contribute to today's discussion, please don't hesitate to leave us your opinions in the comment section below. Thanks for listening.